I interview Madison McGruff, who kind of goes into detail into her story, into her therapy story, and what she's learned along the way. So without further ado, here she is.
On the podcast today, I have Madison McGruff, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. Welcome to the show, Madison.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Really show finally.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off. Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to have you on and hear your story. So, yeah, as you know, as little as much detail, it'd be good to hear your OCD story.
Sure. So, I believe that I've struggled with OCD for most of my life. My biggest themes with OCD have been sexual orientation OCD for the most part. That's always been the one that's stuck the most and just caused me the most pain. But looking back, I realized that I've had OCD in kind of a few different ways throughout my lifetime. I'd say I have like earliest memories of struggling with it since around age 8. I remember there was like a point in time where I was washing my hands repetitively, like I had hand washing. And I don't really remember why I was washing my hands so frequently, but I just knew that I was kind of scared of getting sick, scared of spreading an illness. And it wasn't something that I would say was like contamination OCD, and it wasn't really severe, but you know, I would wash my hands in really hot water pretty frequently. And people would notice like my hands were really raw and kind of red in the winter time. So that was kind of like looking back, definitely an indication of like a small way that OCD was manifesting itself in my life. But also I had very bad insomnia when I was a kid. I remember like laying awake in bed, and I come from like a Christian background. So I have like vivid memories of kind of saying prayers over and over and over again, feeling like I never said it right or it wasn't long enough, or like there was something more that I needed to say before I could go to sleep. And again, it's so long ago now, I don't really remember what was fueling that, but I just remember like laying awake in bed and just having thoughts racing through my mind and not being able to sleep, and caused a lot of problems because, then I would panic that I wasn't getting enough sleep and that could cause me like health problems or would just be really hard for me the next day. And so I would tell my parents and kind of panic about that and, kind of wake the whole house up. And it was definitely a little bit of a nightmare for everyone. But again, no one really thought it was like a diagnosable condition. They just thought it was kind of a phase I was going through. And similar to that, I always worried about like the safety of my family, specifically my mom, because I'm really close to my mom. So I would always call her whenever she was out of the house a few times. And if she didn't pick up the phone, I would get a little bit worried. And if I tried calling her again and she still didn't answer, then I would get progressively more worried, more panicked. And it would kind of fuel, like spiral into like a panic attack, basically. So just these little things that I didn't really know what was going on, but I was definitely a worried kid. High strung, big imagination, always kind of saying, what if this, what if that, what if this? And not really, just, I didn't really let my guard down very often. I was just very high strung and kind of stressed out. But also I think really determined. Like I had a lot of perfectionism growing up as well. I took like my academics really seriously. I also am like a songwriter and I have a big background in music. So, took that really seriously as well. And, looking back, that's another way that I see OCD in my story is, with schoolwork and things like that. I really just took things from like 0 to 100 when it went to like studying for exams and, preparing for like a show. It was something I felt like I had to prepare to a T. Nothing was ever good enough. I never felt like I was ready. I was always worried that, you know, I needed to practice it one more time or study it one more time. Otherwise, like the whole thing would go wrong and backfire on me. So always just very nervous. And I think struggled with a sense of readiness and a sense of trusting myself that I like knew information and that I was capable of like, I don't know, you know, getting through situations. I wanted to have this certainty, you know, that I was ready and prepared for whatever was going to be thrown at me. So that really affected me, especially like starting high school. I didn't have much of a social life because I irrationally, like I pretty much approached school in a very irrational manner. I was probably as stressed as like a CEO of a major company, like about biology exams and like math tests. And I knew it was crazy and I knew that no one else my age was like that stressed out about it. But for some reason it was just like this, I couldn't get myself to calm down unless I was like compulsively studying, compulsively like locking myself in my room and basically torturing myself to always be working at something. Otherwise I felt like I was being inefficient, I was being lazy, and I was just kind of leaving myself open to the uncertainty of failure and stuff like that, which made high school just not a lot of fun. And I have like, again, vivid memories of going on vacations with my family or like going out to restaurants, and I would bring like my textbooks with me. I always used to joke that my textbooks would like go more places than I did because they would basically be in my car at all times. And I never gave myself a chance to just relax. I really struggled with letting go of things. If there was something coming up on my to-do list, I felt the urgent need to attack it right then and there. I couldn't just like let it be out in the future and just engage in the present. It was like, if it was a future, I had to be working toward it now. My family definitely noticed that I was a problem, and my teachers noticed that it was a problem. I had teachers come up to me and tell me like, you know, you're more stressed about this stuff than like I am for you. Like, you need to stop studying. You need to like take a break, go do something else, disengage. And I tried, but I just had that very perfectionistic mindset that was really hard for me to break because I'm a very, very all or nothing person. And that's a huge way that OCD kind of manifested itself in my life, is I always had the mentality, like, if I'm going to do something, I'm either not going to do it or I'm going to do it at a, you know, 100% level, which just made things difficult when you're growing up and you're learning to juggle kind of different things in your life and different commitments. I wasn't good at doing that. And I was very unwilling to do that too. Like, I wouldn't commit to something unless I knew I could give it my 100% all. Mm-hmm. I don't really feel like I was in high school, honestly, like looking back. I was obviously there, but my mind wasn't there. It was a very stressed mentality. And it got worse when I started to struggle with intrusive thoughts and puro, which is when things got really bad and really severe for me. And that's kind of what I consider to be like my first entry into OCD, in the sense that it was becoming something that was breaking down my lifestyle to a point where it was becoming more unbearable, more unlivable. But the whole time that I struggled with pure OCD, I was very high functioning. You know, I was still working super hard in school. I was still keeping up with like my music commitments, doing big shows, keeping up this life that looked like I had everything together. But mentally kind of falling apart and mentally feeling super scared and super confused as to what was going on. That started about my freshman year of high school as well. I, for a short period of time, remember having like some kind of harm intrusive thoughts, very vaguely. They were very like short-lived for the most part. But I remember being worried that I was going to like contaminate my family or, you know, poison them or somehow hurt them, even though I didn't want to. Really worried that maybe I had I don't even know like what would cause me to like be afraid of something like this, but like worried that I had HIV or AIDS and I was spreading it to other people. Which was like so irrational, but like I do remember worrying about that. And being like very, very cautious and scared. And Yeah, just things that didn't really make sense, you know, worrying that like I was gonna somehow do something really awful to other people. And I struggled with false memories. That's like the biggest thing I would say that caused my OCD to be so painful is like false memories and not being able to rely upon your memory and like completely losing touch with what is and what isn't real. Like inwardly knowing like, no, that didn't happen. But on the other hand, also spiraling into this kind of rumination of like, but what if it did? And what if I just don't remember? Or what if I was unconsciously doing something wrong? And yeah, totally losing trust in who I was as a person, the things that I would do or wouldn't do. Kind of felt like I was worried that I was being like controlled by a force that wasn't my own, that I could be susceptible to something like that. And that was just really scary and really weird. And I had no idea where it was coming from. And it eventually transpired into sexual intrusive thoughts, which was the worst of it for me. For a long time, like my first few years of high school, I mean, I was a very, very, very sheltered kid. Again, grew up in like a Christian background, kind of like always in my own imagination all the time because of the fact that I think OCD played a role in that. Like I was so up in my head. I had so many like racing thoughts. I was always so concerned about something. I wasn't really in tune with the things that most people my age are in tune with when they're just like a teenager. I was always worried about something. And so very, very out of touch with just kind of like the normal high school life. But the first like sexual intrusive thought I can remember, was really being afraid that somehow I had like slept with someone or impregnated, like become impregnated, that I was pregnant, and that I didn't remember doing it. And I don't struggle with that at all anymore. I think it's kind of almost like really absurd looking back on it now. But I think a lot of my background plays into that. Like I was raised in a background that really like one of the worst things you could do is, you know, do something sexually immoral, you know, become like a pregnant teenager, you know, lose your virginity, things like that. And at the time, like I honestly, there's so many things going on in my mind. Like I was so sheltered. I didn't even really know anything about sex, honestly. But something about me was so worried that like, oh my God, what if somehow I, you know, lost control and that is something I did or something I would do or, have already done and I just don't remember it. And it was very, very stressful. I just remember like having crippling anxiety, mainly because of false memories, with intrusive thoughts, my brain would kind of like latch on to several different things. And, a lot of times with intrusive thoughts, you're getting these like sexual intrusive thoughts that feel, I mean, obviously they're just thoughts, but they seem really real and they like plague your imagination. So it was almost like once I imagined something, I couldn't really differentiate if it was just my imagination or if it was real. And at the core of who I was, like I, you know, if someone held a gun to my head, I would be able to say like, no, I'm pretty sure like that didn't happen. And, you know, I'm not pregnant or, you know, I didn't do anything, but something in my mind was misfiring and I could not convince myself. Like I needed certainty again and I didn't trust myself to give myself certainty. So I remember like carrying around my phone all the time and I would videotape, like whenever I was alone, I would kind of like audio record myself. So if I was doing homework, I would kind of just like read my assignments aloud or something. I would basically find any way to create proof that I was okay, that I hadn't done anything, something didn't happen, that I wouldn't remember later. I really wanted to have evidence. I would always try to stay close to my family. I would always try to be like around someone so that they could kind of like, supervise me, you know, like I really didn't trust myself. But I also had no idea what this was. you know, and it was something that was like really weird to talk about, really uncomfortable to talk about. And I felt crazy. I felt like I was going crazy. I thought other people would see me as crazy. The only person that I could kind of talk these things through with was my mom. And my mom she always knew me as just someone that was always very amped up, worried, you know, super duper careful and self-conscious. And so whenever I would voice these kind of really irrational concerns, she would just be like, what are you talking about? Like, that's crazy. You're fine. Don't worry about it. But I don't think she understood like the level of trauma that I was going through. Mm-hmm. And it was really scary. It was really hard. And I just felt like a bad person. I think I carried like a lot of shame for struggling with something that I didn't know what it was. And also just having all these thoughts that made me feel, especially with the upbringing that I had, it just made me feel like this, like, why would I even think something like that? Why would I even, you know, let my mind go there? You know, something's wrong with me. And trying to like rid myself of shame constantly was just something I obviously remember doing all the time. I would pray. I had like this prayer that I would pray. Like I would just like close my, like whenever I would get an intrusive thought, I would like squeeze my eyes tight shut as much as I could. And I would say like, you know, forgive me of this thought. I don't want it. I've never done it. You know, I never would. I just like this weird, like ritualistic thing. Every night I would go to bed, I would like cling to my Bible. Like I wouldn't sleep with like a stuffed animal or something normal. It was like, I would have my Bible near my bed and I would like cling to that. Cause something, I was scared of these thoughts and I was scared of like this inner part of me that seemed to be like dangerous or something. And had no idea what was going on. And it got progressively worse as it started to get into more of like the HOCD, like sexual orientation thoughts. I just remember like the thoughts progressively going from like, what if I slept with someone, or like, what if, you know, I had, you know, cause my mom would like latch on to people and, you know, I would get an intrusive thought and then have a hard time differentiating if it was like fact or fiction. And eventually it kind of moved on to like, what if I kissed a girl, or what if I wanted to, or, what if that's something that I would do, or like I would lose control and that's something that, like, what if that's an inner desire of mine that I just haven't really realized yet? And that was really, really scary too. I mean, it was just as scary as the other thoughts I was having, but, you know, unfortunately I was kind of like, the background that I grew up in was kind of raised to believe that like being gay is wrong. It's a sin. It's like an abomination. All things that I strongly don't believe now, and that really break my heart even saying. But it really scared me. I think it was just like this continuation of like, how could I have these thoughts? You know, what's going on in my head? Why am I a bad person? But it was really a continuation of just the sexual thoughts I was having in the first place. It just became my brain latching on to, you know, people in my life that I knew, like friends that I had, and just throwing all these doubts in my mind. Like, what if you really like, you don't just like your friend? Like, what if you have feelings for her? What if you, you know, you actually want to be with her? Just all these things that I had never really thought about that all of a sudden were just like coming out of nowhere, you know, bombarding my brain 24/7 with pretty much, I mean, most people I would interact with. And yeah, I the story that I wrote, that I sent to you for the OCD website, or OCD Stories website, is all about kind of like an experience I had with sexual intrusive thoughts. It was like the night of my 16th birthday, and I remember having all my friends over, and it was like a very normal night. We were all celebrating. It was fun. And I was laying in my bed when we were all trying to go to sleep, and my friends were in the room next door, like sleeping in sleeping bags on the floor. And all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, I had this thought of like, what if I like sexually harassed one of my friends in the middle of the night? Or what if I did something to one of them in the middle of the night? Or what if I am going to do something? And it was just the first feeling of like trauma that I can remember. Like this feeling of like suffocating from fear and from shame and from not knowing how to process something like that, like really having no idea what was going on. And of course, then I had no idea how to handle intrusive thoughts. So I was fighting them. I was like trying to reason all the reasons why I wouldn't do something like that, why that's totally against my values, you know, trying to find rationality, trying to find certainty, and also just feeling like so ashamed, like how am I gonna tell anyone about this, or how, if I want to get help, like how am I even going to like speak to even my own mom about like this? Like it seems so absurd. It seems so sickening. And I remember waking up the next morning. I barely slept that night, and I woke up the next morning, and it was so hard for me to like even look at my friends. It was so hard for me to pretend like everything was okay, you know, because in my head I just had all of these thoughts that were so unspeakable. And then I thought were, you know, coming from me, you know, or meant something about me. And yeah, we had breakfast that morning and I pretended to be fine, but I was so shaken that day. And that whole day I didn't say anything, I didn't mention anything. But my parents like had a family birthday dinner for me. They were all giving me like gifts and cards and, you know, giving me hugs and expressing their love for me. And I just remember feeling like I felt like I had committed some heinous crime. You know, I felt so undeserving. And it was that like the fact that I was the only one who knew the content of my thoughts and I didn't know how to share them with other people. It was just like the scariest feeling. And that feeling kind of went with me. And, you know, it would flare up, it would get better sometimes, but that feeling kind of carried through my entire high school experience as well as college for me. And it got worse. You know, it was things of a very similar nature, and things that would feel, you know, even more real because my brain would just collect all these reasons for why I was this person or why I had these desires or why it must be true. You know, my mind would spiral back to like, which is a very common thing for people who have OCD, I realize, but kind of like analyzing your past, trying to find like meaning from your childhood, which was really hard for me too, because I had, when I was young, like I was a super big tomboy. Like I wanted to be a boy for a long time. I remember like wanting a brother, and most of my friends were boys, and I was just really rambunctious and totally like not girly at all. And that freaked me out when I started like looking back into the content of like my childhood and trying to make meaning of those things. I was so worried that like, what if who I was as a kid is like who I really want to be now, and somehow my desires are being suppressed, and you know, what if my religion or like what I believe, my upbringing is the thing that's suppressing like my true desires, and I'll never figure out what that is. Yeah, just really wrestling with just like, and reading into like experiences that I had as a kid that honestly, like OCD had a lot of, it had a lot to work with. Like it, and that's, I think that's why HOCD stuck with me so much, is because it had so much ammunition. You know, it was something that felt like it could be real. You know, it could be real. I had no idea. I couldn't get certainty. I couldn't figure it out on my own. I was such a, you know, worried person throughout. I mean, most of my life was fairly normal. This story kind of makes it sound, you know, intense and insane, but I definitely didn't have like the typical high school experience, the typical college experience until I would say like my last year of college is when things finally started to get a little bit better. But yeah, I was struggling with something that I didn't even know was a disorder, and it didn't give me a lot of room to have a very normal, healthy social life. And I criticize myself for that. Like, why haven't I been in a relationship? Why have I, not even really thought about it? Why have I not like put more attention into this thing? Like I'm, a young adult. Isn't that what I should be doing? And then I would read back into my childhood and like past experiences and all the ammunition that OCD had there. And it just felt overwhelming. Like there was no way that I could find, up from down. And it continued on that way. It continued on that way until the moment that I decided I was going to get therapy. I found out my sophomore year of college that I had OCD. So yeah, like pretty much, I don't know, almost, I don't know, 8 years after probably experiencing it for the first time, at least 6 years of living with it really intensely. And that's because I started getting into like the compulsion of like Googling things online and trying to find, answers online and, read forums and all that stuff to figure out, is this real? Is this my mind? What's up and down? And that's where I came across like intrusive thoughts and, read about like sexual orientation OCD. And I was like, oh my God, like I had no idea it was a thing. No idea that there were other people that struggled with it. It was very mind-blowing, but at the same time, like I had so much doubt and I was in such a wave that it provided only like a very temporary relief for me. It was a moment of like, oh, that's good to know that like this could be a disorder and wow, my whole life could be explained by this thing. But what if it's not, my mind instantly went to what if it's not OCD though? What if it's something else, or what if it just looks like it's OCD, but really it's not. And I had all these reasons built up as to why it wasn't OCD, why it didn't sound like other people's stories. And I also was reading about like therapy for OCD and ERP and like exposure and response prevention and what that would require of me, kind of to face my fears head on and to expose myself to things that I was very much running from at the time. And I was like, that is crazy. I'm never going to do that. That's insane. Yeah. And I honestly thought that getting help would be like the demise of my experience, that it would prove all my thoughts to be true, that it would kind of ruin my life because something would be revealed about me that would kind of flip everything that I knew onto its head and I would never be the same. So I was very, very resistant to the idea of getting therapy. And it wasn't until, I mean, with time in college, things did get gradually better as I like learned coping mechanisms. And because I was so high functioning, I mean, nobody knew that I was struggling with this other than like one person in my life, who's my mom. None of my friends knew. They had no idea. I maintained a 4.0 GPA in high school and college. Like I was working myself to the bone, constantly keeping myself busy, constantly like trying to maintain this aura of perfectionism and really, really, especially in college, focused on my image. Like how am I coming across to people? How do they perceive me? Always just wanting to be seen as someone that had their life together and putting on this front. And so I learned all these really unhealthy coping mechanisms for like just keeping my life intact as much as I could. So things did get a little bit better with OCD and the thoughts. But it wasn't until I graduated from college last May and I was sitting at graduation and I was still getting like these intrusive thoughts where I was like, okay, this is not how I want to live my life. And now I'm graduating. I've been living with this for 8 years. I have no idea what's going on, but like I want to move on to a new chapter in my life. I want to accomplish new things after graduation. I finally have time to maybe like devote myself to therapy, so I need to get help. And something like I saw a movie with a friend very, very soon after graduation, and that movie like spiked some very triggering thoughts, and I had another night of like feeling that very traumatic feeling of like suffocating and panicking pretty much all night long. And spending hours and hours and hours on my phone trying to find out information. And that's when I just kind of basically like waved a white flag and said, I need to get help. Like I need to, even if it's what ends up, because I really did think like it was going to end up for the worst, that it was going to flip everything on its head. And really, I catastrophized therapy, and I really felt like it was going to be something that would create like a devastating outcome in my life. But I was at the point where I was just willing to kind of do it anyway, because I had no other options. And I didn't want to live that way anymore, especially after graduating and realizing that nothing was changing on its own. It wasn't just going to go away one day. So the next day I emailed, my now therapist, Shiva, who you've interviewed, yeah, I think twice before. I emailed her, I sent her this really dramatic, really long email, like saying like, I need help. I've heard you're an OCD therapist in my area. You know, I'm suicidal, I'm all these things. And, I don't know if this is going to help me or not, but like, I need to talk to someone about this and be honest for the first time in my life. And I think like a day later, somehow, cause I was looking up her website, more information about her, and somehow I came across, her interview with you. And that was the first interview of the podcast that I listened to. So that was my first introduction to the OCD stories. And, it was at a point where I was just so, so defeated. I felt so like, so awful, in the sense that on the outside, everything was so perfect for me. Like I just graduated with like honors. I graduated with a 4.0. I, you know, had friends that always told me all, and it drove me nuts, but they would always tell me like, oh my God, Madison, you're so perfect. How are you so perfect? You know, I wish I could be more like you. And every time they said that, like, it would just make me, God, it made me feel ill inside. Because so much about the way that I was looking at myself and looking at, this disorder that I was facing was so toxic. And I hated myself at that point in my life. Like I hated everything about me. I never felt good enough. I always was self-conscious. I had severe anxiety. I felt super socially awkward, and I didn't know how to love myself at all. So I was just at a very, very low moment, and I happened to come across those episodes, and it was the first time I had hope, in the sense that I had no idea there was an OCD community out there. And I just started listening to all of these stories, and I realized that I wasn't alone. And I just had this desire to not only take care of myself and get therapy and move through the process, but also become a part of the community and start to advocate eventually. But yeah, it changed my life. Absolutely. I mean, that's like such an understatement. Cause I was totally alone. I mean, surrounded by people, but none of them knew what I was going through. So to find like this podcast at the moment that I needed it the most was really a miracle. And I just derived so much inspiration from it. And it gave me hope to think like, okay, I can do this. I can step into the unknown. I can get the therapy that I need. And I don't know what's going to happen, but other people have done it, and I'm going to do it too. And yeah, and therapy has changed my life. And I feel like I've been a pretty different person ever since. So it's pretty incredible how fast things change for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, look, thank you. Well, I'm honored to be a part of your story. I'm glad the podcast has helped you. And look, thank you also for going into your story in so much detail.
Yeah, sorry, that was long.
No, it's good. You've answered about 70% of my questions, so it stops good. Me from answering and asking them. But no, thank you for going into that. And yeah, so therapy was really, really helpful for you, which is great. I'm so glad to hear that. Is there anything in particular you want to share about the therapy, whether it's stuff you found hard or stuff that was like kind of light bulb moments within therapy or anything like that?
Yeah. so many light bulb moments. They didn't happen instantly for me at all. I think I had to get to the point where I was really, really willing, you know, and that took a little while. Going to my first therapy session, like, I was very nervous. I was not really willing to be very vulnerable. And I didn't know what to expect. And it took a while before I was really ready to begin ERP, and dive into, like, exposures. Because I was very resistant to the idea of exposing myself to the things that I knew I would be very afraid of, and that would really spike my anxiety. But I think the biggest light bulb moment was when I realized, like, I have to actually lose myself in this process. And what I mean by that is, like, I was so scared of, like, stepping into the unknown and, like, totally diving into uncertainty. I always, like, was trying to cling to things that I knew to be true or things that I hoped were true, or, like, you know, just trying to cling to, like, reassurance in some way. And I remember just, like, sitting, I don't even remember what session it was, but I just remember sitting in that session realizing, like, okay, this is not going to work until I fully dive in and have no idea what I'm diving into. And I think that's, especially with pure OCD, I think that's kind of the way it is. Like, you really have to run into something that your entire body is telling you is a threat, that you have no idea if you're going to resurface from. And I just had to trust. I had to trust, like, I'm going to do this thing that scares the actual shit out of me. I'm going to do it. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how I'll respond. I don't know what's going to resurface and what's going to come up for me. But, like, I'm going to do this anyway. I'm going to dive into that wave. And I'm going to trust that no matter what happens, someday I'm going to resurface. And it might not be with the answers that I want, and it might not be with the reality that I was hoping for, but I cannot keep staying in the shallow end and, like, dipping my toes in the deep end and thinking that something's going to change. Like, I need to run full force into this wave, with no idea if I have the strength to swim or the, you know, like, no idea what's going to happen. Just, kind of a full willingness to go with the tide and let it take it wherever it takes me. And I think ACT, I read The Happiness Trap, which really helped. I think a lot of those principles made a big difference for me. Just the idea that you can, and mindfulness as well, the idea that you can sit with your anxiety, that you can sit with your discomfort, that the biggest pain comes in fighting it, which I think is so true with almost every emotion, is, like, most of our pain comes from wanting, you know, anger or sadness or depression to go away, and resisting those things rather than letting ourselves experience them, letting ourselves accept and embrace them. So yeah, when I was doing exposures, that was a huge practice for me of, like, really reversing my mindset and my mentality and rewiring my brain to say, oh, it's actually okay for me to feel super uncomfortable and super nervous and really anxious. I'm just going to be, like, an observer of my own body and my own mental state, and, like, really observe what that experience is like for me, and do so correctively and non-judgmentally, not attaching meaning to it, which is, like, a very, very, very different approach to my thoughts than I had before getting therapy. You know, it's all about fighting and resisting and, like, reversing my thoughts. Whereas mindfulness and meditation and ACT is all about acknowledging them, letting them be there, bringing them with you, inviting them in, and moving toward your values anyway. So yeah, I think that's huge. I mean that's what I do all the time now, and I get nervous all the time still. Like, I was very nervous to do this, but it's like, okay, well, I'm just gonna bring anxiety with me, you know, I'm gonna bring whatever thoughts pop up with me, my value, I'm still moving toward my value. And as long as I'm moving toward my values, like I can always be proud of myself for doing that, regardless of the outcome, you know, regardless of whether things go exactly the way I plan them to go. And really alongside that, you know, dropping my perfectionistic mindset, and shifting what my idea of success looks like in a pretty dramatic way.
Yeah, sounds it. Well, no, look, that's great. I like the idea of your willingness and, yeah, just kind of going for it. So thank you for explaining that. One thing, and maybe this links to where you were talking about mindfulness and ACT, but are there any other lifestyle changes you've made or things you've introduced into your life that have that help with mental health or OCD or anything like that?
Yeah, I would say a few like basic things, like on a physical level, like just getting more sleep, is something that has really, I think, changed my experience with anxiety and my relationship to anxiety and especially OCD. Like I notice on the days when I get more sleep and I give myself more rest, my brain doesn't really go as haywire as it used to. Or it's more able to like cope with those thoughts and move forward toward my to-do list anyway, and not get like wrapped into a panic state. So yeah, getting more sleep, especially because I was the type of person who always felt like, you know, I had to be perfecting things. So there was no time to sleep, you know, like only get like 6 hours of sleep max and get up and get the job done and crush everything, you know, do everything perfectly and then go to bed and wake up the next day and do the same thing. Was a really unhealthy mindset. Because again, it was like that very all or nothing mentality where I felt like I had to do everything perfectly or there was no point of doing anything at all. So I've really, really worked on adjusting that, which has been hard because it feels kind of shaky and wrong sometimes, but you know, I let myself sleep in on days when I need to. I don't, like I said, I don't place as much emphasis on perfecting things. It's more just accomplishing things. It's doing hard things and things that scare me and moving toward my values and just, feeling proud of myself for doing those things, regardless of the manner in which I completed them. You know, also exercise, like going to work out. And even if it's not the ideal amount of time that I wanted to exercise or the ideal situation or circumstances, or I didn't do as well as I wanted to, like just doing it anyway. And yeah, just approaching everything with like just letting go a little bit and releasing kind of and approaching things with a much more healthy, much more gentle, self-loving mentality. And that comes, I think, with a lot of work on self-compassion and realizing the extent, I think, of what you're doing when you're coping with a mental health disorder. I mean, it is really brave work and it is really hard work. And for the first time in therapy, I looked back on my life and I had pride in my story, whereas beforehand I would have never, ever wanted to do something like this. I would never want people to know what I've gone through. I saw it as my biggest weakness. I think that's why I pursued success so much, honestly, is because I wanted to find something else that I could take pride in, because I had so much shame of the mental things that were going on for me. And I felt like success was the only way to kind of balance that in my head, and to find worth and to find meaning. So the day that I really looked at what I've accomplished, like despite having such a paralyzing mental health disorder and not even realizing that I had it, I just kind of looked at myself in a different way. Like I had compassion and empathy and love, and I try to bring that with me into my day-to-day life now. If things go wrong, you know, if I have a bad day, if I slip into a lot of compulsions, having a gentle response, I think, is so necessary because being human is hard, regardless of whether you have mental health struggles or not. It's just hard. And every day that you're struggling with a mental health disorder and you decide to get out of bed and you decide to do things that scare you, you know, you're doing something pretty amazing. So just giving myself credit for the small things that I never gave myself credit for before has made a huge difference and given me actually, ironically, way more energy and space to become the person that I want to be. I think the moment that you kind of let go, you actually give yourself permission to be a much more likable, authentic version of yourself than the robotic, kind of manipulative, perfectionistic mindset. If that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely makes sense. I can't speak. Yeah, well put. Really well put. Okay, so just general words of hope now for people with OCD.
It gets better. It really does. I had no idea that it could. I really didn't believe that it could. I had so much doubt and I was so skeptical. And it's weird. It's honestly weird to be on this podcast right now and weird to be on like the other end of therapy and to be applying to grad school to become hopefully someday an OCD therapist. I would have never ever, like, in my wildest dreams imagined that. But things can get better if you have the willingness to kind of confront your inner demons, your inner struggles, your shame, your vulnerability, the things that you don't want to look at, the things that you run from. I heard a quote recently from Brené Brown where she said, like, if you're not confronting and looking yourself in the mirror and facing the things that you're afraid of or that you're ashamed of in your life, then you are inevitably living them. And I think that's so true. You know, like you can't be free of something that you're not willing to face. And the moment that you decide to face it, it might not be a quick process, but the moment that you decide to face it is your first step toward breaking free from it. And living in harmony with it instead of living in a really aggressive, toxic relationship with it. Yeah, I think just the idea that it gets better, I think that's a fact, honestly. If you put in the work and you don't give up and you keep pushing at it. And also that the things that you have to go through therapy make you such a stronger person. I think that I notice now that there are so many people in my life who I love dearly, but who don't really look themselves in the mirror or don't really face the things in their life that are toxic or are holding them back because it's too painful. And they've never really had a reason or like a severe reason, like a mental health disorder, to go to therapy and to get help and to make changes and to totally transform the way that they think about certain things. So the fact that I've had to do that at an early young age is something I'm really grateful for because I feel like now I am in a place where I can handle I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much I can handle, but I feel like I can handle a lot because I have handled a lot in the past. And I have a much more healthy relationship with struggling and failure and coping. So I just feel like I'm in a much more healthy state. And I think that that's just the result of getting the help you need and facing the things that sometimes you don't want to face. It really is the healthiest thing for you sometimes. And I think it makes you a much better, stronger person in the long run.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's say you can pick up that phone and call your 20-year-old self when she was in college. What would you tell her?
I would love to call my 20-year-old self, honestly, because there's so much I would tell her, and I think it would be really emotional. I think the first thing I would say is, like, I love you for who you are and where you're at right now and everything that you're going through. because I really didn't love myself at that point in my life at all. And all I could see was the things that I wanted to change and the things that weren't good enough and the things that were causing me pain, that I couldn't share with anyone else. So I think just saying, like, I love you, you're okay. And as long as you, you know, I'm here for you, and as long as I'm here for you, you can get through whatever life throws at you. And also I would just tell her, like, calm down, you know, like, calm down, relax, enjoy your life, live in the present. All the things that you're worrying about, they seem so urgent and they seem so scary, but they really aren't, you know, they're like, you know, the Wizard of Oz with like a mask, on that looks really, really scary, but behind the curtain, it's really nothing there. Nothing to worry about. And just take one day at a time and embrace uncertainty. I would really try to nail that into my head because I was so, I hated that idea so much. I resisted it for so many years, just the idea of living with uncertainty. But the more that you accept uncertainty, the more that you actually, in a very weird, ironic way, like, get more certainty sometimes. There's a lot of things that I have to live with uncertainty with now that I don't think I'll ever have like 100% clarity on. But I feel like for the most part, I have enough clarity to move forward toward my values. You know, I'm someone that, like, especially with like sexual orientation OCD, I always felt like I had to have like this answer as to why I had these experiences in childhood and like what these thoughts meant and attach meaning to them and come to a conclusion. And through ERP and like diving into the unknown and facing uncertainty, I realized, like, okay, well, I might not ever have 100% certainty. But right now I know, like, I'm pretty sure I want to be in a relationship with a man. That is something that's a value of mine, is to hopefully be in a meaningful relationship someday. So that's the direction I'm moving toward right now. And if someday that changes for some reason, like, I'll face that then. Could it change? Yeah. Yeah. 'Cause life is uncertainty. You know, life is uncertainty. That's the very definition of it. You know, it could really change for anyone when you think about it. But it's not something I have to constantly worry about now. And when those thoughts come up, I just lean into them. I shrug my shoulders. I, you know, kind of thank my brain for trying to freak me out, just knowing that it's trying to keep me safe, and say, you know, you can come along with me, but this isn't something that I'm going to divulge in because I know where this leads. I know where this takes me, and it's not healthy. So we're going to keep moving and embrace whatever comes next.
Nice. Yeah, I like it. Okay, now you've got a billboard where you live. What do you want written on that billboard?
I've been thinking about this for a while because I've listened to your podcast so many times. I think there's a song that has carried me through a lot of my mental health kind of battles, whether that be like depression or anxiety, OCD. And it's by Florence and the Machine. It's called Shake It Out. I just love every lyric of that song. And the chorus says, it's hard to dance with a devil on your back, so shake it out. And I think I would put something along those lines on there, just because I think everyone, no matter who they are, has some sort of devil on their back, some sort of idea of themselves that's negative, or, you know, an emotion that they're carrying around that's paralyzing, or a mental health disorder or grief. And it isn't about, like, I don't think shake it out means try to get rid of it or fight it or like try to change it. I think it just means, like, you know, shake it out in the sense that you can still dance with these things being attached to you. You can still dance in the chaos. You can still, don't be afraid to move. Don't be afraid to let loose. Don't be afraid to dive in. These things are real, you know, and they carry their pain, but they're also what make life beautiful because they're something we're all experiencing. And there's so much beauty in that mess. And if you can look it in the eye, you can stare that devil in the face, and grow from whatever it is you see when you confront that thing, you can move past it and you can actually take it along with you in a very, very healthy way instead of a way that's like weighing you down and poisoning you from the inside out. So I don't know, something positive, something that doesn't necessarily relate to mental health super specifically.
Yeah.
But I think that anyone, you know, anyone can kind of find meaning in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I like that. I haven't actually heard that song. At least I don't think I have. I'll check it out. Look, thank you so much for your time today. Before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to say or share?
I think just a word of kind of, again, hope just for anyone out there. Like, I was really nervous to do this, but I was just thinking about the way that my life has changed from other people getting on here and sharing their stories. So, you know, if there's like one person out there that can relate to anything that I'm saying, then it's totally worth, you know, everything that I've gone through. I really think that I see so much meaning in the things that I've faced now. I wouldn't really change it, I don't think. There's so much about my life that I want to change. You know, like, I'm sad that high school was so hard for me, and I'm sad that college wasn't as fun as I wanted it to be. There's a lot that I wish I could go back and change in that sense. But, you know, if I can help people now, because of the things that I went through then I think it all matters and it's all worth it. And so for anyone who feels like they're invisible or overlooked or, living a life that doesn't have a whole lot of significance or meaning, and they're just suffering for no reason, it isn't for no reason. I can guarantee you that the people that have suffered the most are the people I've learned from. And I've learned the most from my suffering, and I'm hoping other people can learn from it as well. So don't be afraid to tell your story. Don't be afraid to accept your story. Don't be afraid to take pride in your story. For so long, I felt like it was silly to like be proud of myself for going through this, but there's so much pride to have, I think, in just waking up every day and living the life that you want to live, and walking toward your values and changing your mind and rewiring your mentality in a more healthy way. So I think everything has a reason behind it, and just live your story, walk in it, be proud of it, and you will make a difference, and it will come full circle for you.
Yeah. Nice. Good way to end.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your story, Madison.
Thank you for having me.
No,
really appreciate it.
I found it inspiring, and hopefully I'm sure everyone else will too.
So there you have it. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Madison for sharing her story. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.